The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
We are back on the Hugh Hewitt radio program. This is not guest host Larry O'Connor. This is guest host Kurt Schlichter, senior columnist at townhall.com, noted Los Angeles trial lawyer, the author of the forthcoming book, We'll Be Back, The Fall and Rise of America, which you should order on Amazon. And, of course, the Kelly Turnbull series of conservative action novels, 27-year retired Army colonel. And I am having some PTSD, folks, because not from war. Gosh, I was an armed car wash guy. But from the mention of Oklahoma, because I did basic training at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, in beautiful Lawton. And, yes, I did not start as a colonel. I started as a private first class. So I am a Mustang from Officer Candidate School, unlike you fancy West Point guys. We've got somebody who's very special here today. And he is running for Senate in the great state of Oklahoma. Alex Gray, who has distinguished himself in an important way that we will get to. Good morning, Alex. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. How are you, Kurt?
I'm doing great. You have announced that you are throwing your hat in the ring to replace Senator Imhoff, who is retiring. And it's a fairly crowded field, but you've got some pretty great endorsements. You got former National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien, who you work with and worked with at the National Security Council. And you've got Rick Grenell. And I got to tell you, just those two guys being in your corner, that's enough for me.
Well, no, I've been very gratified by having a lot of national security folks from the Trump administration who've endorsed me. We're going to roll out some more the next several days. We've had current Senator Mike Lee from Utah, one of the premier constitutional conservatives in the U.S. Senate.
And we'll be talking to him after a little later today.
Perfect. Well, he endorsed me yesterday. We also got the endorsement of Kash Patel, who was chief of staff of the Defense Department under President Trump, was a colleague of mine at the NSC, was the lead investigator for Devin Nunes on the Russiagate investigation in the House. So really, you know, you're seeing conservatives from across national security, fiscal conservatism, constitutional conservatism, rallying to this campaign.
And most importantly, Alex, you are getting the hardcore crowd, which I am. As I say, I'm a former cavalry officer. I like to screen Hugh's right flank. I am a hardcore conservative, and I'm all behind you, not only because of your resume, and not only because great guys like Rick Grenell and Robert O'Brien are behind you, but because you are the guy that walked the disgraceful Vindman brothers out of the White House. You said, pack your stuff, put it in a box, and get out. And I got to tell you, anybody who does that, I'll crawl on broken glass to get you elected.
Well, Kurt, you know, you can imagine that I'll focus a little bit on the bigger picture of not talk about specific folks that we had to deal with in personnel matters. But I'll say this, you know, one of the things I was most proud of doing for President Trump was making sure that the NSC was filled with people who shared his vision for an America First foreign policy and see that was loyal, that ran effectively, that had competent, qualified people. And, you know, when we came in, when Ambassador O'Brien and I took those roles, the NSC was about 230 people. It was leaking like a sieve. It was still filled with people from the Obama era in many cases. It was filled with people from previous national security advisors who didn't share the America First agenda. And one of the things that I'm most proud of is that by the time we left, the NSC had the smallest, most competent, really just, it was about 110 policy professionals. It was lean, it was mean, and we had accomplished more in an 18-month period than I would say any NSC, probably since at least the first Gulf War, if not before. And that was really due to President Trump's leadership, but I think also because there was a core group around him, finally, after 4 years at the NSC, who believed in his agenda and was willing to do what it took to get it done.
Well, Alex Gray running for Senate in Oklahoma, you've got the foreign policy chops, and of course, you walked the Vindmans out of the White House, which endears you to veterans like me forever. But let's get a lightning round here on other stuff, on domestic stuff. Very quick answers. What do we do about illegal aliens flooding our borders?
If we can't control our southern border, we don't have a country, Kurt. That is the number one, I would say that is the number one national security issue facing this country right now. If we can't control the flow of illegals coming across the southern border, our sovereignty is at risk. And so I think before we can talk about anything else, we've got to get our border under control.
Alex Gray, would you ever vote for any form of amnesty for illegal aliens?
I would never even consider it.
Alex Gray, the Second Amendment, is national concealed carry reciprocity a priority to you? The right to keep and bear arms wherever you live in the United States.
It's a fundamental constitutional right, Kurt. We can't. One of the things that makes this country so special is our devotion to individual liberty. We have a strong national security abroad. We have a strong military for the purpose of preserving our individual liberty at home. And there's nothing more connected to individual liberty than our ability to keep and bear arms. And so you would have a tremendous champion in that if I'm in the United States Senate.
Would you ever vote under any circumstance to limit the right of a law-abiding, healthy adult American citizen to own and train with and use for the defense of themselves, their community, or their constitution what liberals call a assault rifle?
Well, given that most of our friends on the left side of the spectrum have absolutely no idea what a assault rifle is or is not, let me just tell you, I cannot imagine a possible scenario in which I would be supporting something like that. And I think I think the lack of an understanding of what end of a gun the bullet comes out of is a real problem for our friends on the left when they're trying to talk about gun control policy.
Well, Alex, as you can see, I'm trying to qualify you with hardcore conservatives who may have doubts because you did work in Washington. And I don't want them to hold that against you. What is your favorite caliber? Mine is .45.
You know, I'm going to agree with you, actually, Kurt. I think .45 is a pretty good caliber.
America? Yeah, you see what we've got here. It's great that we are recruiting candidates like you. CRT. Now, I talked to some very moderate conservatives as part of my podcast, which you can get on Town Hall VIP, to find out what they're thinking. Guys who are a lot softer than I am. And, you know, I'm concerned about mean tweets. And I, you know, sometimes we need to work together and then, you know, and reach across the aisle. And then I mentioned CRT and I see a 180-degree Jekyll and Hyde change. Our people hate CRT. Would you support laws protecting college students and employees from being discriminated against based on CRT type or forced to endure racist CRT type insanity?
Well, I would absolutely support protecting our children, finding ways, whether children especially, but look, I would also even extend it to the workplace, finding ways to protect American citizens from indoctrination. I mean, it's creeping authoritarianism, the way the left in this country has sought to impose this radical ideological agenda that's so anathema to liberty, to the Constitution, and to the historic way in which Americans have looked at ourselves as a melting pot where we don't define ourselves based on our race and our background. I'm married to an immigrant. My son
is going
to be a, Yeah, I mean, I'm one side of my family. My son's going to be, a descendant of the Mayflower on one side and a second generation American on the other. I don't think we need to have hyphenated Americans, and to have a approach to race that is so radicalized the way we have with CRT, that goes against everything this country stands for. And so I think we have to look for ways to protect Americans from being discriminated against in the name of a radical CRT agenda.
Well, Alex Gray, you've said a lot of things out here today that have warmed my heart. And of course, my heart was surgically removed when I went to law school. How can we help you and your campaign if we so desire? What's your website?
You can go to alexgrayforsenate.com. Look, we've been really gratified. We've raised $100,000 in our first 24 hours. So really tremendous support from across Oklahoma, across the country, grassroots conservatives who've looked at what we're doing and see, look, there's one person who, it's easy to talk about supporting Donald Trump. It's easy to say you're for Donald Trump, you're for America first. It's another thing to put your money where your mouth is and to spend 4 years working for him. Kurt, I was with him from the first day he walked into the White House. I was one of the last two people to walk out of his West Wing on the last day of his presidency. I saw him leave, say goodbye to him when he walked onto Marine One. You know, it's a whole different thing to put your body on the line, metaphorically speaking, to try and serve his presidency and his agenda. I would ask for support from all America first, true Trump-believing conservatives, and I think we can make a real difference in the U.S. Senate.
Can you give us that website one more time, Alex Gray? We got about 15 seconds.
It's alexgrayforsenate.com.
Well, Alex, like I said, you warmed my heart with your tale of walking the Vindman brothers out of the White House, those absolute disgraces. And how can I not be happy with a guy who recognizes the superiority of .45 caliber? I'm Kurt Schlichter, guest hosting for the great Hugh Hewitt. We will be right back with Michael Oren.
Fighting soldiers from the sky.
We are back on the Hugh Hewitt radio program. I'm guest host Kurt Schlichter, senior columnist at Town Hall, noted trial lawyer, author of the forthcoming We'll Be Back, The Fall and Rise of America, which you can order on Amazon, coming out in July, and 27-year Army colonel. I'm joined by Dr. Michael Oren from the State of Israel, a paratrooper. Dr. Oren, welcome.
I haven't called that in a long time, Kurt. Thank you.
Well, look, I went and got my badge. I did my five jumps, essentially to meet girls. So, in that way, I guess it was a tactical maneuver. But let's get back to fun.
I just meet the ground, to tell you the truth. I was talking to that.
Well, Dr. Oren, I got to tell you, I'm very worried, and I'm very worried not only for my own country, but for the state of Israel. This administration seems to be on the verge of making an outrageous and literally insane deal with the thugs who run Iran that will actually empower them to obtain the bomb, threatening both Israel and the United States. Israel's got to be worried.
Oh, of course we're worried. Of course we're worried. And we're also, dumbfounded. We can't think of any logical reason why our allies in the United States of America would want to do this to us. You know, it was interesting. This week, both the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia and the ruler of the United Arab Emirates refused to take phone calls from the President of the United States. I don't remember a case like that in history. I really don't. And the reason that they refused to take phone calls, because I guess the President was calling them to get them to ramp up oil production so that oil prices in the United States would go down. But they're so furious at him. They're going out of their mind. Why would our ally, the President of the United States, jeopardize our lives this way?
It's insane to many of us here in the United States, too. Are these Are these people so wrapped up in their faculty lounge ideology that they can't see that they're holding people's lives in the palm of their hands? I think one of the problems, Dr. Oren, is, and it affects many leaders in the West, is a lot of our kind of transnational ruling class are essentially unserious people who have not experienced, for example, what most of the leaders of Israel have experienced. Most of you are actual combat veterans. You've seen up close the wages of good decisions and bad decisions.
Unfortunately, really, some bad ones. What's weird here is that, here's an administration that came into office promising to do two things in foreign affairs. One was to restore confidence in the United States as an ally, and the other was to stand up for human rights around the world. You know, presumably the previous administration didn't do this. And what are they going to do? They're going to sign an agreement which in effect betrays America's allies in the Middle East and jeopardizes our future security, perhaps even our future survival. And they're going to give tens, perhaps hundreds of billions of dollars to the world's one of the world's most repressive regimes. And, I mean, how does that square with the promises that the administration gave coming into office? It makes no sense at all.
It's bizarre to me, too, Dr. Oren. They seem to welcome taking actions that harm both America and its allies, including shutting down our energy industry here. You look at it and say, if you were America's enemy, what would you do differently? And I can't see it, and I can only hope that some sane folks within our government listen to the appeals of our allies like Israel. I just find it mind-boggling. Does Israel feel it's on its own and that it needs to be ready to take appropriate action to prevent the Iranians from crossing the nuclear threshold?
Israel will take appropriate. We say we are not beholden in any way to this agreement. Certainly we object to it and resent it. But at the end of the day, we're going to have to do whatever is necessary to ensure our security and our survival. Now, we may have some interesting allies in the Middle East, but at the end of the day, Israel is the only power that could take on Iran. And I believe we have that ability.
Well, Dr. Oren, if Israel has to act in its self-defense, there are hundreds of millions of Americans who will be behind you. And I know that you aren't interested in interfering in American politics, but from my side, when we take control back, you know you will have a steadfast friend in the White House. Very quickly, we only have about 30 seconds. As a military man, what's your assessment of Russian performance in Ukraine? To me, looks like they are not up to the standard I expected.
Unless Putin has some other game up his sleeve, that it's a slow, slogging war of attrition, waiting for the world to lose interest in the story, and all the time ramping up the pressure without actually getting into the major cities. Russians have had a hard time fighting in major cities,
yes,
Chechnya and elsewhere.
They're noted for that.
Yeah, maybe that's Putin's game, just to ride the whole thing out and squeeze these guys until they give in to Russia's demand.
Well, Dr. Michael Oren, Putin certainly doesn't have a lot of respect for what the West's ruling class, and frankly, that's probably deserved. I'm Kurt Schlichter, guest hosting for the great Hugh Hewitt. Stick around for our next hour. We've got great stuff coming up. Hewitt, I am Kurt Schlichter, 27-year Army colonel, graduate of the United States Army War College. Hey, I'm no war hero like Pete Buttigieg. I just ran a heavily armed car wash. I am also a senior columnist at townhall.com, a noted trial lawyer, and the author of the forthcoming Regnery book. We'll be back, The Fall and Rise of America. If you want to hear about all sorts of crazy stuff, like a national divorce, what would a civil war look like? Is America doomed? Spoiler, it's not. We're going to win. Go get. We'll be back. The Fall and Rise of America. You can pre-order. It comes out in July. I have a special pleasure now to introduce our next guest. I was just with him this weekend at a veterans event in Las Vegas. I worked side by side with him for election integrity following the flawed 2020 election, also in Las Vegas. It's my pal Adam Laxalt running for Senate. Adam, good morning. Welcome to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Well, Adam, there's a lot of stuff going on. And as a veteran, you have a excellent perspective on this. I'm wondering what you think about all this kind of loose talk about no-fly zones and, you know, even troops on the ground in Ukraine. I know you support the Ukrainian resistance, as I do, but do you think it's in America's vital interest that we expose, you know, that we risk armed conflict with the Soviet Union? Russia. Freudian slip.
I think it's incredibly important that we do not put ground troops on the ground or put ourselves in a position as a nation where we may have to do something like that. I mean, this is in Europe. You have a lot of countries there with armed forces. This is their backyard. I want to see their troops on the ground, their blood and treasure being risked if that's the direction they decide to go. But you know, after a couple decades of wars, there's massive fatigue here in our country. I know our voters wouldn't support something like that. And you know, let's not forget that America, under the leadership of President Biden and his fellow Democrats, is in as worse a shape it's been in a generation. And people are feeling that acutely and keenly. And we have a lot to take care of to save our great country before we're endeavoring and trying to save another country.
Well, Adam Laxalt, running for Senate from the great state of Nevada, you are running against essentially a non-entity. I literally will have to sit here and think about what her name is because she's done so little except be a reliable vote for Chuck Schumer. A 2,741-page continuing resolution just passed the House. It's going over to the Senate, where the Senate will have about a day to decide to vote on it. What do you think of that process, and would you ever vote for something that you couldn't read?
You know, there's no question the process beyond broken. We can't even pass a budget as a nation, and we keep jamming these massive bills down not only the elected members' throats, but of course, most importantly, the people's throats, because that's who feel the brunt of this. But you know, this is right now we're dealing with this crisis of the Democrats that basically spin every single one of their failed policies. First and foremost, the energy price increases and the gas price increases, which we all know started the day President Biden got elected. Hopefully your listeners remember vividly when President Biden walked directly about a foot from a young lady and he looked and said, "Look in my eyes, I will kill fossil fuels." And here, when their policies from day one was to kill the fossil fuel industry, which, of course, resulted in continual spike increases, price increases, I should say. And now they're going with this new Putin price hike hashtag. They think they're going to get away with it. Of course, the media is dutifully supporting him in that. But we must hold their feet to the fire. It's their policies that put America in this terrible place that already dramatically increased inflation, energy prices, and of course, the price at the pump.
Well, Adam Laxalt, you are what in the military we call the decisive point, because you are the seat most likely to flip from Democrat to Republican in 2022. And then, you know, there are several other seats that are potentially vulnerable, but yours is the most vulnerable. If we don't win in Nevada, we're not going to take back the Senate. Tell us about how you're going to take on that non-entity of a incumbent senator and how you're going to win that seat.
Look, it's there's a lot of races out there and a lot of races that are crowding for attention. But it's no exaggeration to say this Senate race in Nevada will decide who has the majority. We must win it. Of course, we must hold a handful of Republican incumbents as well for the math to work out. And yeah, we should win the House. We should win a bunch of other races. But there simply are not many Senate races that we can flip. And I'm running against Senator Catherine Cortez Masto, who is an absolute rubber stamp for the Biden administration. votes 96% with Joe Biden, 98% with Chuck Schumer. Of course, she touts the moderate line, but she has never led for our state against her left. You know, perfect example is not a peep about putting Russia's sanctions on their oil over the last many, many weeks. I've been calling for that. Obviously, a lot of Republicans have been calling for it. She waits till 2 hours after Biden makes his press conference two days ago before she finally tweets out that she supports that effort. And this is a pattern with Senator Masto. She will never break from her party. She does not lead for our state, whether it's borders, whether it's law and order, whether it was Build Back Better. She just stands with the left. And I can tell you, Kurt, people are ready for massive change in my home state. Obviously, they're ready for massive change in America, and we plan on holding her accountable.
Well, Adam Laxalt, you've actually earned some pretty incredible endorsements. I know Rick Grinnell, who was with us fighting for election integrity in Las Vegas after the election, he certainly backs you. And, of course, your roommate in the Navy backs you. Who was that guy again?
Oh, just a little-known governor from Florida, Ron DeSantis.
Ah! So you got Grinnell, you got Ron DeSantis. Anybody else in your corner who's...
We do have former President Trump, who is front and center and then very supportive, supported me in the very first week. Senator Cruz, you know, you name it, really. People are ready to support this effort. They know I'm going to go to D.C. and be part of... hopefully this new generation. I'm 43 years old. When I was Attorney General, I was a part of the small band of conservative AGs that woke up every single day fighting against President Obama and trying to save our Constitution. And we need to bring that kind of fighting spirit to D.C., not just for all of D.C., but within our own party. And that's something I certainly intend to do.
Well, you know, Adam Laxalt, I watched it happen when we were working together in Las Vegas. You were up early. You went to bed late. You never stopped. You were always going, going, going. And I you know, we had met one or two times before that. But working closely side by side with you, I was impressed just by your energy. And that, you know, both reflects your family, which famously your grandfather, Paul Laxalt, was one of Ronald Reagan's best friends and a conservative leader, but also your military background. You are an aggressive officer. You move to attack.
You know, it's our time is all I can say. People know that our country is in grave trouble, and the reason I'm running for this seat is to be part of that change. Change that we massively need. And, you know, I think in the end of the day, people want leadership, and people need to know that people are ready to fight for this country. And it's something obviously I did in uniform, both in the Navy and Iraq, in my 20s. But, you know, now we've got to save the entire American project, save the American way of life. And look, the good news is, as terrible as things felt, from, you know, basically January of 2021.
Well, Adam, we're coming up against a break. How do we help you? What's your website?
AdamLaxalt.com.
Adam Laxalt, Senator, our next senator from the great state of Nevada. I'm Kurt Schlichter, guest hosting here for the great Hugh Hewitt. We'll be right back.
We made it, man.
We're back with the Johnny Lydon of conservative talk radio, Kurt Schlichter. Guest hosting for the great Hugh Hewitt. Now, you're probably thinking, hey, I can see Hugh having the Sex Pistols as his bumper music. And if you do, my advice to you is take fewer drugs. Anyway, we've got a real treat now. Someone, I was on a panel. Well, I moderated the panel. She was one of the stars. She made the news at our CPAC panel on who the Democrats are going to try and foist upon us in 2024. You know her. You've seen her on Fox. You've seen her everywhere. She's got a new podcast coming out in the middle of the month. Monica Crowley, welcome to the Hugh Hewitt radio program.
Hey, Kurt, good morning. Thank you so much for having me. And it was great fun to be with you at CPAC.
Well, you made all the news, but we'll get to that in a minute. You are famously someone who began very young working for Richard Nixon, perhaps our most astute foreign policy president ever. And you worked for him after his retirement. What would President Nixon think of the performance of the Biden administration in the myriad foreign policy disasters into which administration has stumbled?
Well, thank you very much for that question. It's always such a pleasure to talk with you and talk about my first boss, President Nixon, for whom I worked during the last years of his life. Not when he was president. I was not even a thought at that time. But during the last years of his life, I worked with him as a foreign policy assistant. And in fact, just now, Newsweek has published my latest column, because people ask me the same thing all the time. What would Nixon do? What would he think about China, about Russia, about Ukraine, about a whole range of issues? So I put pen to paper, and Newsweek has literally just published it. So I'm going to post it up on my Twitter, at Monica Crowley, and on my Instagram, at Monica Crowley _, because I went back and I looked at Nixon, what Nixon wrote during those last years following the collapse of the Soviet Union, and what he wrote in his books and his last op-eds. And Kurt, he really did predict the rise of Putin, because he predicted the rise of a new despotism in Russia unless the United States led a Western effort to jump in at that very vulnerable moment in late 91, 92, even early 93, when the Russians were without communism, without all of those institutions, and had begun a brand new democracy, which was flailing. It was weak. They had no institutions, no kind of institutional history or memory of what representative government really was. So Nixon put out a plan to George H.W. Bush at the time about how the U.S. could lead something like a new Marshall Plan to try to lock in and stabilize this new democracy in Russia and to try to encourage free market capitalism there so it could all take root. And of course, George H.W. Bush and all the Western leaders ignored that advice. The one person who didn't, interestingly, was Bill Clinton. When he came in 1993, he brought Nixon into the White House. They talked about a whole range of issues, including China and Russia. And Clinton actually committed some aid. Now, it wasn't nearly enough. It was sort of a very modest commitment, so it wasn't enough. But at least he recognized the need to try to intervene to stabilize the situation. Nobody really took Nixon's advice. And so Nixon's prediction of this new despotism that would fill that vacuum and have Russia back to its old expansionist tricks, including with Ukraine, as Nixon predicted, here it is. And so I encourage everybody to go to Newsweek and check out the piece, because, as usual, Nixon was correct.
Monica Crowley, what do you think Nixon would do if he materialized in the White House right now once again?
Well, first of all, I think, like Trump, if Nixon had been president, we wouldn't be in this position to begin with.
I think you're probably right.
Yeah. There is a theory in international relations. It's an authentic theory called the madman theory, which is you want an American president who's not actually crazy, but is perceived as just crazy enough by our adversaries that they will think twice, if not three times, before acting against America's interests and against our allies in the world, because they think, well, this president is just nuts enough that he might nuke us. That's what you want. Richard Nixon did it well. Ronald Reagan did it well. Donald Trump did it the best of them all, right?
I think they're very well.
Yeah, so you wouldn't be in this position. But if we were, look, I think Nixon would have had us on energy independence the way Trump got us there for the first time in U.S. history. If we weren't there as we are now, Nixon would have halted all Russian imports and got us as quickly as possible back to energy independence or to it in the first place. And there would be very aggressive conversations happening with the Russians about backing off. Look, you need American strength. American weakness is provocative. And when we are perceived as weak, whether it's in real terms or a perception of American weakness, the wheels come off the world. Richard Nixon, you know, inherited the Vietnam War, and there were all these complications. But Nixon also took some very creative actions to try to stabilize the global situation until we could get back to a point of American strength, as we were a couple of years later under Ronald Reagan. So he did the opening to China, which, by the way, right now, Richard Nixon, and prior to this moment, Nixon was very adaptable and very flexible. So while he opened China as a geostrategic move to counterbalance growing Soviet power at the moment, he would have done what Donald Trump wanted to do but was stopped by the radical left, which is improve relations with Russia.
Yep.
To reverse it, to use Russia as a counterweight against growing Chinese power.
You know, first. Monica Crowley, so few people make that. And the point's so obvious. It's really instructive that our garbage ruling elite is so inept that they can't see that basic principle, that when you have a three-legged stool of power, you kind of want to try. You don't have to be buddies with them, but you can be an alliance of convenience against the third. And I look back on Richard Nixon in an analog to the Ukrainian affair, in the 73 war against Israel. Israel was reeling. It was being pushed back. And Richard Nixon famously said, send them everything that'll fly and back them up. So we do have kind of a preview of the short term tactical moves that Nixon might have made with regard to Ukraine.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And, you know, Trump really did put this into the modern world. You know, everybody was screaming, the entire foreign policy establishment, oh, you can't move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem because the Arab street will go crazy. Well, he did it. He basically said, you know, go blank yourself, right? I'm going to go do it because it's the right thing to do. He did it. Nothing happened.
Exactly, Monica Crowley. Look, here's a challenge. What is the success? Name a single success of America's foreign policy elite since the year 2000. Just one. Just one.
Right. We haven't.
We haven't.
We've had disasters of intelligence, too, starting with 9/11.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think our next president is going to have to come in and clean house extensively. There is a lot of dead wood to be pruned. Now, at CPAC, we had a great time on our panel talking about who the Democrats are going to try and put up to in 2024. And the challenges they're going to face because of President Biden's gross and manifest incompetence. And you had a couple of suggestions that actually made some news.
Yes. Yeah, so you did a fantastic job moderating that panel. And you came to me first about Mrs. Clinton because I was the only woman on the panel. So I wanted a real crack at her, and you gave it to me.
All yours.
Mrs. Clinton is literally eaten alive by the idea that she lost the presidency not once but twice to two men who had a better sense of where the American people were at the moment, Barack Obama and Donald Trump. She has spent her entire adult life and maybe even her childhood drooling to be president of the United States and put up with serial humiliations from her husband and so on in order to get there. And she still hasn't gotten there. So make no mistake, Mrs. Clinton still has the ambition to be president, and she could very well run because nobody thinks that, the desiccated old senile man in the White House now is going to make another 5 minutes, never mind another 2 years. So they have to Bigfoot Kamala somehow, and that's going to be very difficult. She's a sitting vice president. She's a woman of color. So that's Mrs. Clinton. That's her challenge. But the way they solve the black woman problem, as I mentioned at CPAC, without alienating the black female vote, which is critical to the Democrats, is to think about running Michelle Obama. And a lot of people poo-poo that. I talked about this at CPAC. Oh, she's not political. They're making too much money now. She's not going to do it. She is a very political person, and she kind of solves all issues because she's very popular. She is immune to criticism, and she's actually taking the path that Barack and Bill Clinton and Hillary all took to the Democratic nomination, writing an autobiography, going on a big tour to sell the autobiography,
a big corporate deal. A terrifying vision of the future. Monica Crowley, where can we find your new podcast? We only have a few seconds.
Yes, it's going to launch in the next, 2 weeks, and it will be everywhere.
Thank you, Monica Crowley. This is Kurt Schlichter on The Hugh Hewitt Show. We'll be right back with Jim Talent. Me, one thing, that Kurt Schlichter is guest hosting for the great Hugh Hewitt. And, of course, that Senator Jim Talent is our next guest. Senator Talent, I hope you appreciate the musical choices that we're making.
I was going to say, it must be great to be on the bridge and in command of the music, huh?
Yes, there are some commanders who are calm and sober and collected, and then there's me in control of music. But, Senator...
Well, sober anyway, I think. I don't know how calm and collected you are, but I've been watching you. I think you look pretty sober.
Sometimes you put a good face on things. In any case, Senator Talent, we got to get serious here. I'm taking a look at what's happening from a military. I retired United States Army colonel, graduated in the Army War College. And I'm looking at the Russian forces, and it seems to me that we have, and you should do this because you want to fight the strongest enemy. You don't want to prepare to fight a weak one. But it seems to me that we have seriously overestimated the capabilities, both in operational action and logistics, of the Russian forces. They don't seem to be hitting their marks as far as taking Ukraine.
Yeah, well, this is what guys like you who know this stuff are arguing about, right? Is this a bad army, or was it just a bad plan, or is it both, right? Right now, I'm inclined to say it was just a terrible plan. And as a result, I think the Russians are going to win some battles, which is in the sense that they're going to cause tremendous damage in urban areas and kill a lot of civilians. It looks to me like they're losing the war in the sense that they're not going to accomplish what was their strategic political objective, to decapitate the Ukrainian government and install a puppet who would do Putin's bidding and be able, relatively at least, to stabilize the country. That seems to me a long way away for them, for them at this point. But I'm not prepared to draw conclusions about the overall operational capability of the Russian armed forces so far.
Well, Senator Jim Talent, we are certainly watching what the Russians do. I hope we're taking time away from important tasks like transsexual awareness and equity training to look at what the Russians are doing and how they're fighting and assessing that. I know our Chinese opponents are doing it, and they did it when we were in Desert Storm, where I was 31 years ago right now. I know they did it after the air war over Serbia. They watch very closely what we do. They take notes, and they incorporate lessons learned. Are you confident that our military can do that, too, right now?
I think we're good at that. I don't think the problem has primarily been in the Pentagon the last few years. The problem is the policy we've been following in Europe and really around the world. I mean, look at what we've done in the last 15 years in Europe. So we admitted a number of countries into NATO at the same time as we were drawing down radically our ability to defend them. As you know, as of 2013, we didn't have a working tank in Europe. The Germans were training with broomsticks in 2015 because they didn't have rifles, right? So then we failed to reduce Putin's main point of economic leverage over the West, which was energy. Particularly the Europeans did, but we did as well. We failed consistently to respond vigorously to his more minor provocations like the cyber intrusions, the overflights in the Baltics, the whole thing. And we've been giving him concessions without conditions in the last year alone. We rolled over New START, no conditions. Waived Nord Stream, no conditions, invited him to a summit, no conditions, And you know, Kurt, weakness is provocative. And it's almost like we set the stage to structure the incentives for something like this, and now we've got it.
Well, retired Senator Jim Talent, you spent many years in the Senate working alongside Joe Biden, who was apparently in the Senate for about 340 years. And you had a chance to observe him. I watch him fumble around Ukraine. It looks like he's going to wander into a disastrous renewed JCPOA with Iran.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Is this guy dumb? Does he just hate America? I look at this and I'm baffled.
No, he doesn't hate America. Okay, I think what you cannot overestimate the fundamental mistakes in judgment, the basic overall framework within which so many people in Washington approach the world. Now, you mentioned the Middle East. By the way, there's a good article up in Tablet about the concessions that we're going to grant them, the sanctions that we're going to lift, which are just unbelievable. It's why people are resigning, career people and political employees have been resigning from that team. But the Middle East is a classic example. Biden thinks we can structure a stable and acceptable security arrangement in the Middle East around a partnership with Iran.
Well, that's madness. Thank you, retired Senator Jim Talent. I'm Kurt Schlichter, guest hosting for the great Hugh Hewitt. We're going to be right back with another hour of stuff, so stick around.
I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-1172.
We are back on the Hugh Hewitt radio program. I'm guest host Kurt Schlichter, noted Los Angeles trial lawyer, retired United States Army colonel, senior columnist at townhall.com, author of the upcoming book, We'll Be Back, The Rise and Fall of America, which you should order from Regnery right now. And, of course, I have the greatest bumper music in the history of the Hugh Hewitt radio program. I Fought the Law, the cover of the Bobby Fuller song by The Clash. And I couldn't think of a better song for our next guest, who's known as a constitutional scholar. He's also a senator from the great state of Utah. Welcome, Mike Lee. How are you, Senator Lee?
I'm doing great, even better now that I'm on the air with you.
Oh, I love how you're already kissing up to me. That is incredible. Senator Lee, I need to play a clip for you from Nancy Pelosi, because we've been having a controversy here over whether our ruling elite is dumb or they merely think we're dumb. Cut number two, please.
In fact, when I spoke to President Zelensky, I said, Billie Jean King sends you her regards and wants to know how she can help in an event.
Senator Lee, what do you think of that?
There's a lot going on there, but of course, you know, she peers deep into the soul of Vladimir Zelensky. She knows what he really said just, you know, a few short days ago.
Uh-huh.
He said, I don't need a ride. I need ammunition and Billie Jean King. That last part has been clipped out, and so she was just channeling that.
Excellent, Senator Lee. Those words are going to echo through Ukrainian history. Senator Lee, in the next 24 hours, you are going to be voting on a 2,741-page continuing resolution, which you have had less than 24 hours to examine. It covers about $1 trillion in spending. And according to my math, which, of course, is questionable because I'm a lawyer, we're at about a 9.6 annual inflation rate right now based on the 0.8% month-to-month inflation that we just saw come out today. How can you vote on something that's 2,741 pages long within 24 hours? How can that be?
You cannot do it. It cannot be done. It cannot be done, honestly. no, you can do it. You can tell your constituents, well, I did it because I had to do it because my party leadership told me I should do it. And they told me they would blame me for a government shutdown if I didn't vote for it. But when you're doing that, you are inflicting a tax hike on the poor and on the middle class. That's what you're doing.
Uh-huh.
You're taking money from ordinary American families who've already seen, you know, prior to the last numbers coming out, we crunched those and concluded the average American family paying $385 a month more for everything they buy than they were a year ago, every single month. In Utah, that's actually higher. It's $511 a month. Those numbers are going to jump even higher once we calculate in the new numbers from today. So when you're doing that, when you vote for this sort of thing, you're getting praise from the media who will dutifully comply with the request from party leadership to praise people who vote for it. And you're avoiding perhaps the argument that you'll be blamed for a shutdown. But you are taxing the poor and the middle class. That is disgusting. These guys don't even know what they're voting for, and yet they are doing something bad nonetheless, and they know it.
Well, Senator Lee, they're going to come to you, and they're going to ask you to vote for this. What's your response going to be?
No. I'm not going to vote. I can't vote for something that I haven't had adequate opportunity to read. Now, look, my team and I have been poring over this thing for the day that we've had it. 2,700 pages, Kirk, does not read like a fast-paced novel. It doesn't read like your outstanding book coming out. It reads much more slowly. There are a million cross-references. It takes many, many days in order to comprehend them. But what's even worse is that we are, I predict, going to be given basically zero meaningful opportunities to amend this thing. So what we're really doing is putting the faith in the handful of lawmakers, I don't know, three, four, five members of Congress who wrote this thing in secret. And we're just saying you can have it all, and we don't get any say in it. And our constituents don't get any say in it. It's effectively disenfranchising about 300 million Americans at a time when you do that. And this has got to stop. This is why we're $30 trillion in debt, by the way.
You know, I was informed by all the smart, caring people that democracy is important. And as you just pointed out, it doesn't seem to be happening. Now, look, I'm just a simple trial lawyer from Los Angeles. But I remember Schoolhouse Rock, and I remember how a bill becomes a law. And I would think that this thing should have gone through committees, been debated on the floor. You got Jimmy Stewart up there for 12 hours debating his heart out, and then you finally build something that a majority of senators can say, okay, this is a good quality bill. It's not everything I wanted. I made some compromises, but here we are. And instead, you get handed this abomination and told, we failed to do what we should have done, so now it's an emergency of our own creation, and now you've just got to give in. How can this continue?
Well, sadly, I fear that it's going to continue until inflation reaches unsustainable levels where people are revolting and they're saying we want new leadership. We want different senators and congressmen representing us. It didn't have to get this bad. I fear it could reach that point. I fear even worse, Kirk, that it could get so bad that at some point, and we might not be that far from this moment, we'll reach the point where the U.S. is so far in debt. I mean, we're $30 trillion in debt now. We'll reach the point at some point where those who buy U.S. treasuries might start to hesitate to continue to buy U.S. treasuries. When the yield rate is as low as it is, look, all that would have to happen if those who buy U.S. treasuries start demanding something closer to the historic average for treasuries, around 5%, even assuming there's no rebound above that, but if it starts going back to that historical average, then we'd see our annual interest payment going from around, I don't know, $400 billion or so a year to over $1 trillion a year, with the difference being more than our entire outlays for national defense. At that point, government becomes unsustainable and unaffordable, and we're in for a real mess. I hope, I pray that it won't get that bad, but it is getting worse. It's moving in that direction every time we pass one of these.
Well, Senator Mike Lee, before I get to one of your most important duties, which is evaluating a potential nominee to the Supreme Court of the United States, I know that you are running in Utah again. You've got an opponent in the form of Evan McMullen. I'm not sure why he's running other than people who watch MSNBC choose to give him money. How can we help you if we're so inclined?
You can help me if you're so inclined, and I really hope you are so inclined, because I've got a tough race on my hand. He's raised over $1 million. I have it on good authority. He's got a super PAC that has about that much or more, or ready to start attacking me. And he has refused to commit to caucusing with Republicans, and we know what that means. I think there's every reason that we have to fear that he could end up being Joe Biden's guy in the Senate, Chuck Schumer's 51st
vote.
Well,
I think that's a given. I mean, I don't think there's any debate that Evan McMullen will do whatever Chuck Schumer says, because his entire rationale for his undistinguished existence appears to be to tell urban coastal elites what they want to hear.
Yeah, that's right. He voted for Biden. He encouraged others to do the same.
Ugh.
He's praised Joe Biden up and down. Oh, well, attacking Republicans, calling them racist, and going after Donald Trump every time he gets the chance, praising Donald Trump's accomplishments in no areas ever. And so, look, that's why it's concerning. And he could end up making this a close race if he's able to convince people that, you know, he is whatever they want him to be. And so I'd encourage your listeners, anyone within the sound of my voice who'd like to support me should go to leeforsenate.com, leeforsenate.com. He's raising money from Democrats, raising money from Lincoln Project folks, and from the a handful of disaffected Never Trumper Republicans.
Well, look, so, I want to stay FCC.
I need all the help I can get.
I want to stay FCC compliant, so I'm not going to discuss in detail my thoughts on Evan McMullen, because frankly, he doesn't deserve that kind of attention. You do, because you have been there and you have performed. You love our Constitution and you care about it. And I want to talk to you a little about Ketanji Brown Jackson, the potential. Well, she is the nominee for the Supreme Court. And I'm going to go in a little different direction than you might expect. I think she's getting an unfair hit, and I wanted to get your view on it. She represented some accused terrorists in criminal cases, and she's getting some heat for that. Now, I grew up with a mother who was a district attorney. Then she became a defense attorney. Then she became a judge. So she saw it from all things. I think it is absolutely critical that every single accused, including people I don't like, and you know, I'm a 27-year Army colonel, I don't like accused terrorists, but I think it is absolutely important and essential for the operation of our system that everybody who needs representation receive it, including accused criminals. And further, I'm very concerned about the attack on lawyers who defended election integrity following the 2020 election. And I think it's very I ask you, A, would you defend Judge Jackson for defending the accused? But also, would you see if you could find out from her view on the attacks on representation of political opponents of Democrats?
Sure. Yeah, the answer to both questions is yes, and I've always believed, my parents always taught me, my father before me was a lawyer, and they always taught me growing up, everyone needs a good lawyer, not just including, but especially the criminally accused.
Well,
Senator, I've always had a policy of not attacking someone for representing a client.
Well, Senator Mike Lee, that's the kind of integrity that the people of Utah deserve in a senator. And I hope people go and support you at leeforsenate.com. I'm Kurt Schlichter, guest host on the Hugh Hewitt radio program. Stick around.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.